Hello, everyone. This is Tom Trush of RightWaySolutions.com, and welcome to the latest installment of my Marketing Mind series. These interviews are designed to provide you with easy access to some of the best marketing resources available. My goal is to give you useful ideas and valuable tools you can use immediately to attract attention, create customers, and build your business. Best of all, these recordings are absolutely free for you to use and distribute, so please feel free to pass them on to anyone who wants to enhance their promotional efforts. On this recording, you'll hear from David Aronchik, CEO of Hark. A former Microsoft employee and founder of three companies, Aronchik has used search engine optimization and word-of-mouth buzz to help create the world's largest platform for pop culture sound bites. Under Aronchik's leadership, Hark has become one of the 10 largest entertainment and movie sites on the web. More than 66 million visitors a month go to Hark.com, which boasts partnerships with leading Hollywood studios, including Warner Brothers, Universal, and Paramount Pictures. The Hark platform allows visitors to share more than 3 million sound bites and other content offerings via digital embedding or social networks such as Facebook, Twitter, and Google+. Additionally, users can upload their own clips to the Hark platform. During this 42-minute interview, you'll discover the traffic tips that took the startup to 66 million monthly visitors in just 4 years, as well as how to use small audiences to bring big traffic to your website, the surprisingly simple key to getting your website visitors to promote your content for you, how to use free and widely available tools to spot gigantic traffic opportunities within your market, acquire visitors, and boost site awareness. A marketing practice that is so powerful you can merely fill in the blanks and easily find prospects to connect with in seconds. The two keys to establishing yourself as a go-to source or trusted authority online. How to harness the power of free social marketing to increase your online presence and turn your website visitors into passionate advocates for your business. And much more. So let's get started. Okay, David, so let's begin and let's start off just giving a little background about yourself and then explain to listeners about your company, what it does, and then we'll start getting into how you started the company.
Certainly, and I did want to thank you so much for the opportunity to chat about this. My name is David Aronchik. I'm CEO of Hark. We've been running Hark for about 4 years, and my background is... I wanted to come out of school and be a doctor of all things, but I got lured into the internet world in 97 with my first startup that I got off the ground. I'd always been a huge fan of computers. But when a friend of mine and I came up with an idea and we felt like we were going to pursue it, I decided to walk away from the dream of med school and went down that route. That went really well, and then I went on to found a second startup in 99. And after that startup, I went off to work at Microsoft for about 6 years. And then I came out and co-founded Hark.
How did the idea come about to create Hark?
It was another friend of mine and I were sitting around, discussing old movies, and we suddenly came upon the movie War Games, that iconic movie from the 80s that geeks like us absolutely love. And we realized how we really would love to make the sound of the computer a notification on our phone. If I could get a text message from him and it said, "Shall we play a game?" Wouldn't that be hilarious? When we looked online, we realized that there was, effectively no way for the average person to do it. This is actually, in 96, 97, before the iPhone had even, launched to the public. And it was just so hard to do. Yet we felt like these sound bites were so powerful, and there were a ton of people out there who would want them. So what we did was we started looking around. We looked at a lot of the different licensing issues. We looked at the different platforms that were out there and realized that there was a hole in the marketplace. Lots of people looking for it, not a lot of people, with the content and the content owners. Unfortunately, not seeing the opportunity. And so those three things came together, and we launched Merck. We founded it in the fall of 2007, and you know, launched our first version in the middle of 2008.
Okay, so it sounds like the idea was, I mean, you had the idea early, but then, you know, getting it to you know, actually launching it took a few years. Is that more than a few years? It sounds like it took several years. Is that correct?
Yeah, I mean, we really started to get it. We really started to carve out what the opportunity was. We were both working at other places right at the beginning of 2007. The way we did it was we actually started with a very simple, basic site that we could put the content in and put up just to see what we would get attention-wise from search engines and virally and things like that. It was never our intent to have that be 100% live or out there to the world. We had always thought of, you know, building a venture-backed business. My other two startups were also venture-backed, and that was the plan here as well. In fact, things started going so quickly, we actually took down the site. We started to get quite a bit of traffic. And we realized that we didn't want to run afoul of any of the rules about uploading content yourself, which is what we had done, in that very early pilot site. And so we took all the content down and took the site down as well. And then went out in the fall of 2007 and got venture funding with that data in hand. Once we got that, we knew we wanted to turn around and build a user-generated business as the starting point, and that's what we did, and that's what we launched in the middle of 2008.
Okay. So it sounds like when you first, I mean, even before you officially launched, I mean, you had this interest already. So, I mean, you have, there's already demand in the market, which I'm sure is, I mean, that's incredibly powerful. But
yeah.
If we can, you know, go back to the beginning of then, you know, when you did officially launch the site.
Uh-huh.
Can you go into some details on, okay, how did you, you know, then increase the attention on the site and, you know, get more visitors? Obviously, it sounds like you had some and there was some interest, but then once it came down to the site's officially up, how did you then, you know, get people to know about it?
Yeah. You know, it's really interesting. You know, I do want to say it was a little bit of a different world back then, because the SEO world, the search engine optimization world, was very different. It was still kind of less well understood what opportunities there were out there, and we definitely saw it. We used Google's own tools to look at search engine query volume and say, okay, you know, this is what we think people are out there looking for, and this is what we, as a platform, can make it really easy. And you can do searches for anything. We were looking at different things that, you know, Obama or Palin or McCain or Hillary Clinton were saying, what kind of permutations they were looking at, what, you know, in pop culture, what people were looking for, and where we felt like we could fit our need. And I very strongly believe that you can, because Google is this giant fire hose of traffic, and less so, but still as well, Bing and Yahoo as well, you can do a lot of great preliminary research identifying things that people are already out there looking for when they type in search queries, and then potentially go out and win some of those very specific search queries. And that can give you a very solid initial audience. A few thousand, you know, tens of thousands, even hundreds of thousands of people a month, if you do your job right at the start. Beyond that, again, the time that we were getting going, it was so critical that we absolutely had a great social experience. This was even before the, you know, Facebook like buttons were out there. And it was all up to us to making sure that you could tweet something very easily, or you could Facebook something very easily, or, you know, at the time, post to MySpace very easily. It was, you know, we knew that people loved this content, and we wanted them to take it with them. And that's something we really focused on as well. And then finally, this wasn't available for us at the time, but I very strongly believe this, and I pass this along to, a number of different startups that I'm working with right now. You can very, very cost effectively, acquire users, some of those initial set of users, through very cheap search engine advertising. $50 a day, you can easily get, 100, 1,000 users. And those people coming in can, not just be a viral loop for you. Potentially they're going to, like what they see and want to share it. But also you can watch them for the things that really work on your site and the things that don't. And with that awareness, you can take that content, take what people are doing on your site and tweak it, so that, you're better meeting the needs of the people who come in and stay the longest or convert into, paying customers.
So how are you figuring out, Yuan Hark, back in those early days, how are you figuring out what was the most effective for the users? I mean, were you using stuff like your analytics for the page, or how did you determine what people were looking at and what else people would want on the site?
So it's really interesting. We actually are we have kind of two things. The first one was really just focusing on Google Analytics. I'm a huge fan of them. They provide a very nice service for free, and will give you a very nice baseline for what's working and what's not. Now, that said, it's important. There's a lot of tutorials out there that will explain how not to get kind of caught up in what are called vanity metrics. It's very easy to say, look at all these page views I got, look at these unique users, but ignore things like bounce rate or the fact that you only got all these page views because your site was so hard to navigate. You really want to be very focused on what the funnel looks like, when someone comes in, what are you trying to drive them to? And then ultimately, see what the conversion rate is once they get there, if you're looking for a sign up or if you're looking for a purchase. Or if you're just a web publisher, it could be, how do you break, who are the people who break through your average page views? Where maybe your average page views are 3 and you want someone who gets to 5, that could be a good value as well. So those tools are very, very effective. And there are more of them than ever before. Kissmetrics, Mixpanel, are very effective on the, other measurement tools. Optimizely is a remarkable platform for doing, very simple A/B testing, where you can say, I'm going to make this button blue versus red, who clicked on it more. And then, finally, when you do get to someone our size, then you start doing, custom log analysis and studying all the details under the hood. But I really recommend that people start with just the basics. The fact is that those engineers at these companies, these metrics companies, are going to know their stuff way better than you, at the start, and, leverage their wisdom and, build on their platforms, versus rolling something yourself.
Okay. At the start, was there anything that, now looking back from a promotional perspective and making a positive user experience for people and then even attracting more people, are there anything now looking back that you would do different?
It's really interesting. I'm a huge believer in syndication. No matter how big your site is, there are more people than will ever come to your site. And while at the beginning we, really did focus on, some of the embedding strategies, number 12 from YouTube is on our board, and so we very much have that philosophy of taking content with you. I probably would have spent a little bit more time finding out how to have a scalable strategy, which took my content elsewhere. Whereas, you know, it wouldn't just be one person taking an embed and moving it somewhere else. It would, in fact, be, you know, someone taking an entire collection of things and moving them somewhere else, or doing a deal to republish all of our content somewhere else. Those kind of things, I think, can be really scalable, and especially when you're just getting going, you know, it's very easy to fall into a trap to say, well, anything is a win. And you certainly want progress, and you certainly want a little bit of movement every day. But it is really important to focus on the things that are scalable, where, you know, it's not just a win, it's a win times, you know, 100, because every article that you republish will, you know, every article that you publish will be republished, or this is going to be distributed across a blog network, or, you know, a variety of things like that. And those opportunities absolutely are out there, and, you know, it's not to say I would necessarily turn away from the individual strategy, but I would definitely focus on the scaling.
Do you have any advice on, just a typical small business owner, say like a, you know, like a service-based business, maybe like an attorney or something that has content. I mean, any recommendations on how he or she could syndicate that content? So, I mean, like get it up on their site, but then, you know, what else? You know, how can they encourage the syndication?
Absolutely. You know, I think you'll find there are a lot of those syndicators out there already. I think a very underused resource that's out there are some of the larger journals that, you know, from your local tech coverage to your local marketing expert to your local legal experts. They're constantly on the search for, you know, new and interesting content to make their users happy. And you can get that out there in a really effective way. And when you show them that you're, you know, a good writer and that this brings, you know, interest to your people, to the audience, they're going to come back to you and do more. Certainly, you still want to have that article on your page. And, you know, have yours be a resource, but then you're able to leverage this much larger, you know, local journal, and potentially get some connection to that as well. You're always astounded at how many things look like they took years of relationship building and practice and thousands of dollars to do, but I'd be pretty surprised if you couldn't find a paper in your area that, or you know, an online site in your area that wasn't looking for a columnist or wasn't looking for, you know, inches to fill by an expert. You know, your expertise is what differentiates you from everyone else, and will also be the most interesting for those broad audiences.
Well, you know, just the idea of, you know, going towards, you know, journals and different publications that may be in your industry. I mean, obviously there are a lot of those online, but, you know, they're also offline too. Did you do some things with, you know, especially when starting off with HARC, did you do anything to use offline media to bring visitors online?
Yeah, you know, it's always fascinating. We actually just got interviewed for, a Como news story here in Seattle. Como is our local TV, you know, TV news. Though we've had, you know, plenty of, you know, national media press, this is one of those ones where you just kind of feel a sense of local pride that you were able to do it. You know, I think you really hit the nail on the head. You know, it's really astounding how, especially tech folks like us, tend to ignore how many people there are out there in the world who, you know, just don't get their news every day from a, you know, from their RSS feed or their, you know, iPhone Instapaper kind of thing. There are thousands and thousands of people who, you know, would be interested in the, you know, your services or your products or you know, you name it, and simply, you know, just aren't paying attention. Not because they're not interested, but just because that's not their habit. And the fascinating part is because, you know, there are lots of other folks like us who tend to ignore it, like, oh, no, it's not the, you know, homepage of the Huffington Post, there's a lot of opportunity. It's a lot easier to accomplish those kind of goals. You know, that can be a very effective, very scalable way to get the word out without a lot of without a lot of work.
The what you mentioned there at the beginning, that you just had this piece from you know, locally. You said that was TV.
That was TV, yeah, exactly.
So how does something like that for you guys? How does it? How did it come about? Did you guys set out and approach them with like a press release or something, or did they come to you? And just kind of give me an idea how that worked out for you.
Absolutely. So that's actually how you know, as someone who where PR and marketing doesn't come firsthand, you know, it always astounds me the amount of work that it takes to get any story out there in the world. This one, and however, is the exception. It was a really interesting path. We had a big user announcement in the first half of 2012. We did more users than 2011 as a whole, and not just more users. We actually doubled it. So we did a press release around that, and that got some broad pickup in just some, you know, regular tech pieces. That then led to a deep cover story for the journal Xconomy, one of my favorite journals in Seattle and for tech news actually nationwide. And then it turns out the Como reporter just happened to be reading that news story and said, oh, this is great, and they're based in Seattle, I'm going to reach out. So that was the exception, but you really do never know where the things are going to come about, and that's why it is really important to have a regular kind of drumbeat of news and information about your company going out all the time. And more often than not, you know, reporters for TV or radio or regular papers or online, they're all looking for interesting angles that are going to, you know, delight their readers and bring interest. And so, you know, you may feel like you're talking, you know, screaming into the void sometimes by continually sending out, you know, news and updates and, hey, you got a news mention in a random blog. You know, it's not that big, but, you know, it ended up being something really powerful because, you know, this person read it and that person, you know, forwarded it along, and then all of a sudden you're on CNN.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like, I mean, it's just the snowball effect. I mean, I think that promo opportunity that you were just talking about, I think that's a perfect example. I mean, if you initially got coverage someplace else and then, you know, another place, and then the promo reporter saw it and then decided to run. I mean, perfect example of, you know, the size isn't as important as, you know, it's out there and people are going to start seeing it, and especially in this day and age where, you know, people share information so often, you just never know. You know,
yeah, right? That is absolutely right. I would never turn down a coverage or interview or reporting. Write that on me. Bring that up at any point in the future. If I'm ever reported as turning something down, you know, you have every right to fly to Seattle and slap me in the face.
All right, agreed. Okay. Next question I wanted to get into was maintaining contact with the users of your service, and that's, I mean, it's such a critical part of just doing business, of staying in contact with your clients or customers. I wanted to get some ideas on how you maintain contact with the users of your service.
So it's really interesting because for us, you know, the site is the way to connect with them more than anything. The average user on our site comes back about 3.5 times a month. So, you know, it's funny. In some ways, you know, they reach out to us. more than anything. But that said, we really do want as many available opportunities for them to reach out, for them to chat with us. You know, we get hundreds of emails every day that we try and respond to everyone. Certainly, you know, my biggest fan right now, I'm the biggest fan right now of using your Twitter account as a place to connect with people. But you know, in a lot of ways, we try and proactively reach out. When we see someone tweeting something interesting or, you know, asking a question that may or may not even have, you know, our user handle in it, we'll do searches for that and try and answer it. One marketing thing that I heard of a while ago that I really enjoyed, I thought was really good advice, is just do a search for, you know, basically the phrase, can anyone, and then some topic that you're an expert at, like, can anyone recommend a stereo, or can anyone recommend a computer, or can anyone recommend whatever. And you'll find that there are hundreds of thousands of those queries going by every hour of every day. And you can find them and, you know, look for people that, you know, are right up your alley. Potentially they have a decent amount of followers, and you can respond to them and, you know, make a connection in that way. And that's incredibly powerful. You know, maybe you win a user, maybe you don't, but like we were saying earlier, you never know who that person is going to talk to, and, you know, and hopefully they'll be, you know, an advocate for you.
So are you just using the search function in Twitter to do those kind of searches?
Yeah, exactly. Okay. I actually use a program that Twitter just acquired called TweetDeck.
Mm-hmm.
In TweetDeck, you can actually have a column set up specifically that saves that search, and we'll just show you those searches.
So you're getting a continuous feed of people that, you know.
Yep.
Okay, that's great. All right, what about, you know, competition? Now, obviously, you guys are more, you know, well-known. How do you deal with people or services that are offering, you know, something similar to what you're doing?
Do you mean other people doing media platforms like us?
Yes.
Okay. So the recommendation I have for everyone in the media platform space and basically any user generated content space is you have three missions or three primary things that should be your guideposts always. Number one, you want to make it as dead simple as possible for everyone to be able to contribute. I know that you think that you're the only ones who are going to do this right or get the right content in, but you're not. You'll always be surprised with the people who upload things and the things that are the most meaningful. And those pieces of content that come in, you know, certainly they're not all going to be like home runs, but you want to have the community help to craft those and, you know, prop up the ones that represent the kind of community you're looking to build and help correct the ones that don't. Second, you want to make it things dead easy to find. You're always astounded. I'm always astounded at how many people will, kind of miss what we feel like when we roll it out, super obvious navigation elements on the site. Kind of fumble around for way too many page views before they get to their joy. I think that you really need to watch your users, help them find it. A lot of times do things like, you know, preemptively suggest things that they might be interested in reading. And there are lots of tools out to help do that. But not just that, also think about, you know, in Google, or Bing, how your site and your content is represented, because more often than not, they're not going to come to your homepage. They're going to do a search and land, you know, 50 pages deep into your site and then kind of try and figure out, well, what kind of site am I on? What's going on here? And then the third thing is, make it very easy for people to take their content with you. Again, you know, there are a few companies in the world that can really say we are the, you know, the destination. And, you know, as much phenomenal content as the major studios and content producers in the world are, their sites simply are not the destination that people want. You know, the destinations are things like YouTube and Hark and Flickr and Scribd and things like that. Those are the places where people, you know, are going to find the specific content and the specific media that they're looking for. And so by taking your content, whatever it might be, in any format, and bringing it to other places where people are and where people are actually searching for it, through embedding and sharing and, you know, Twitter and Facebook, that can be incredibly powerful. And again, gives you a great leverage of your content. You know, instead of just having meaning for people on your site, it has meaning for people everywhere.
Well, I love that third one. I think it's so often forgotten, you know, making your content, you know, easy to take with. Because, I mean, so many people, you know, I deal with a lot of professional service businesses, and they're so afraid that people will, you know, take their content and then, you know, maybe try to do the service on their own or, you know, take credit for it or whatever.
Yeah.
I mean, it's such an overlooked tip there. And, you know, it kind of digs into to my next question, and that is about, you know, establishing themselves or their businesses as, mm-hmm. like, the go-to source or, you know, the authority. And I was curious about your tips on how to make that happen.
You know, it's a very interesting aspect. The best thing you can do, the absolute best thing you can do is, you know, in that particular case, have an opinion, and have and publish a lot, whatever it might be. To be the authority, you need newness and you need breadth, because, you know, things are always changing, and the worst kind of situation in the world is when someone comes and looks for something and you don't have it. Those two things put together will, over time, establish you as an authority. You know, going back to things like stereo equipment or something like that, you know, it's not just, let's say you wanted to launch a stereo business, and you wanted to have a good site covering, you know, stereo equipment, so that you could use that as a marketing tool for your offline shop. You know, nothing would be more powerful than, you know, weekly blog posts reviewing incoming, you know, stereo equipment, and, you know, lots of guides and other things like that that are kind of everlasting, that people are always going to come back and look for and say, well, you know, now that there's this new technology out there, how does that change your guide and things like that? Because, you know, people are always going to be looking for that stuff, and sadly, the web and search results are so full of very thin and very old content. The way to differentiate is, you know, like I said, newness and breadth.
All right, a couple more questions. Looks like we're coming up on about 32 minutes, and I want to respect your time. But I wanted to get your feeling on what do you see as far as small businesses and marketing, and, you know, it doesn't even have to be small businesses, but just, I guess, business in general and business marketing. What trends do you see right now that you know, businesses need to follow, need to maybe look toward for the future? And, you know, just kind of get your insight on that.
Yeah, you know, it's really interesting. I would say certainly one of the most transformative things today is something that I alluded to at the beginning, is the ability to very cost-effectively acquire, you know, visitors and awareness and things like that. There was a wonderful story I read the other day about a company wanted to, you know, get some awareness out there. And they had reached out to a local Clear Channel affiliate who was running the billboards in the area and said, you know, if you have someone who falls through at any point, just give me a call and we'll buy it last minute and, you know, fill it for, you know, a billboard for a week or two. And, the call came in and they were able to run a billboard, and I think it ended up costing them something like $5,000 or something like that, just, absurdly cheaply. And those kind of opportunities are everywhere, whether or not it's things like, you know, PPC, price per click advertising for Google or Facebook, billboards, late night television commercials you can run. I mean, there are a myriad of ways to do things and watch, you know, what happens, how the people come through and hopefully convert them into real live users. The other thing that's really powerful today as well is, in some ways, marketing has never been cheaper in that you can get a ridiculous amount of social marketing for free. I mentioned Facebook and Twitter, and who knows, by the time this podcast goes out, there may be a new social network that is revolutionizing the world. But the net of it is that your users, we are empowering our users today to become our advocates, to become spokespeople for us. And it's really important that we pay attention to that and make sure that it is as dead simple as possible for them to act on our behalf. Whether or not it's, you know, something as simple as just adding the like button to, you know, every piece of content on the site, or when they browse our site, make sure, you know, their, privacy is being respected and that they have a ticker, you know, the thing in the ticker is properly, you know, populated and they've been asked for approval. Or you can figure out a way, maybe you can get them to log in and participate in that way as well. There are just a lot of opportunities here to have people speak on your behalf. Now, with that comes enormous responsibility because the quickest thing that will tank you is when you start getting a negative viral loop in Facebook or Twitter because people are kind of piling on to something silly that you've done. It'll then be your responsibility to pay attention and connect with those folks.
I think we just saw a good example of that the past couple of days with Shell.
Right. Yes, exactly.
Boy, kind of a nightmare situation there.
Yeah, you don't envy those folks. Anytime you have such a large persona, it really requires extraordinary, especially today, extraordinary attention to what people are talking about and what you're doing.
Right. One overlooked thought that I was thinking as you were saying about having people help you, getting out the, share your material and that kind of stuff. You mentioned that it does come with enormous responsibility. I think it's often forgotten if we take this down to an absolute basic level, you got to create some content that people are going to want to share, so it's something that, it's not just promotional for your company. It's something that is, actually going to give people a reason to share it.
I completely agree. A lot people get kind of beaten up for saying, what's link baity and whether or not you're doing a bad title on your post. But it's not like, since the invention of the newspaper, people have tried to figure out how to, have a compelling first two-line sentence at the beginning of your piece, so that people actually wanted to read more. And that's really important here. It's important to convey your message, but it's also to make it something that, everyone will want to share and read. And when that person shares it in Facebook, they look, smart, or they look interesting because they found this interesting piece and now everyone else is diving in to read it as well. So, I think you really put put your finger on something there about making it not just as shareable as possible, but something worth sharing.
A final question I wanted to get into, and I mean, obviously you have a successful business with HARC, and I'm kind of curious to hear what's the most common question that you get about operating HARC, and then how do you answer it?
The most common operating question that we get about HARC is where are you going next, interestingly. Everyone loves the platform and the content, and they're like, well, you know, you guys have this amazing amount of traffic. What are you going to do with it? And our vision really is kind of the same vision we've always had. We want to be this platform that everyone, you know, can use for these sound bites and truly take everywhere. Today, you know, as much as we love our site, we're basically available, you know, on the website and mobile from a streaming perspective. So you always have to be connected and that kind of thing. But nothing would make me happier than having an embeddable app that, you know, wasn't streaming and where you could make things to be ringtones or download things for PowerPoint or things like that. There's incredible power there, and there were some licensing issues as well involved that have unfortunately slowed us, but our mission kind of remains the same. We just want to be, you know, empowering everyone to use this content everywhere, and we won't stop until we have.
Excellent, excellent. Well, David, I want to thank you for your time. I appreciate all the insight that you gave, the background you gave about HARC, and I think you gave a lot of tips here that people can follow and you know, follow the success, because you know, obviously in just a few short years you've made HARC into a, you know, quite a successful company. And so I really appreciate you sharing all your information and insider secrets.
I really want to appreciate your time as well. You know, I love the work that you're doing, and I really do want to make myself available. You know, I love mentoring new startups, you know, tech or non-tech. You know, please do tell all your listeners and readers, I'm more than happy to answer questions, and I'm excited to be part of this community.
Well, you know, definitely then, you know, give out your contact information, any people that you, or any way that you want people to reach you, and, you know, basically plug yourself, you know.
Oh, absolutely. You know, the easiest way to reach me by a mile is, just my email address. That's, Aronchick, Aronchick at HARC, HARK .com. And, like I said, you can ask me any question you like. I really do love helping businesses get off the ground.
All right. And you said you're also pretty active on Twitter, too?
I am. Twitter, Facebook, G+, you name it. I'm connected.
All right. All right, David. Well, again, thank you for the time. I really appreciate it, and I look forward to sharing all this information with listeners here. And as you've mentioned in here, you never know where this interview could go, so we'll get it out there and just see what happens.
I know where this interview is going to go. I'm assured that there are going to be big things.
Good, good. All right, David, well, I appreciate it. Thanks for your time.
Okay, thank you.
Yep.